Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, March 22nd, 2013. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla's husband, the scribe for the Ra Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit the websites llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And the community website bringforth.org, that's bring the number 4th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I will be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Hey, Carla and Jim, how are you doing today?
Doing well.
We are fine. How are you?
Okay. Doing good. Looks like we have some live callers in the queue, so we're going to have a different format today. Normally we go straight to our opening riff, but I tell you what, we'll make it a middle of the show riff. We'll still do the riff, but we got several callers in the queue, so I'm going to go ahead and go to the first one, which is from 229. Hi there, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you for taking my call.
Hi, who's this?
Yes, my name is Melvin.
Did you say Melvin?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Hi, Melvin. Do you have a question for Carla and Jim?
Yes, ma'am. I just want to see what she can tell me about a friend of mine. Is there some interest with her? Her name is Sterling.
Not a thing. I don't know a Shirley or a Sterling, did you say?
Yes, ma'am.
And do I know this person?
No. Are you doing psychic readings?
No, I'm not doing psychic readings. I'm sorry. I'm thick as a board psychically. You've been given a bad piece of information. I answer questions of a metaphysical nature, but it's just like, well, what do you think about? And then you list a metaphysical question.
I'm sorry.
It's an opinion rather than, I'm so sorry. I wish I could.
Okay.
Can't help you.
Okay.
You. One down, right. Two to go.
Okay. Thanks for calling in. All right, we're going to go to the next one from 941. Let's see.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, my name is Carla. So they're not doing psychic readings today?
Well, I just don't have the ability to. I'm sorry.
Okay.
That piece of bad information.
I wonder if maybe you guys are trying to reach a different show. This is In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Based on the Law of One material, primarily.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sorry.
No problem.
Oh, well, we're sorry. We
okay,
wish
thank
to help.
You.
Hope you find somebody that can answer your questions, sweetheart.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. So let's try one more and see if we got a hit on this one. Let's see. Are you with us from 860?
Hi there.
Hi, are you calling for a psychic reading or are you calling for Carla Ruckert?
No, I wasn't sure what this show was, so I was wondering if you assist, like, with questions about how do you start connecting, like, when you channel?
When I do it?
Yeah.
Well, I don't channel like a lot of people do. I learned to do it simply by calming my mind and becoming very still, and then allowing a thought to come into my mind and speaking it, and then allowing the next thought to come into my mind and speaking it, you know, without editing.
Mm-hmm.
And as I did that, I discovered that I was not just thinking thoughts of myself. I was getting information that was not coming from me. So I worked with it over a period of years, and always in a group, and always with a more experienced channel, and became more able to discern spirit. But that's how I started. I can teach anybody to do it that way. And actually, the way that I teach it is really helpful for people who want to get involved with working with their inner guides, because working with your inner guide, a lot of times you're actually hearing good information from your inner guides, and you're not aware that it's coming in clearly. So if you'll just sit down and either do it out loud the way I did it, or sit there with a piece of paper and a pencil and write down the question that you want, and then clear your mind, and then just write down the first thing that comes to you, and then the next thing, and you might discover your inner guide that way.
Oh, that's pretty neat. Because I do get, it seems like I do have some kind of connection, but it's language. It's not of English language.
It's comforting in knowing that it's mysterious and that there's more to this planet than it looks like there is, but of course you can't get much information if it's not in English. I think that's true of anybody that does glossolalia, you know, the Christian receiving of words and stuff, and a lot of times what they get isn't in English, but it is inspiring in that that it is a flow of information from spirit.
Yeah, it definitely feels good, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. And it really helps if you meditate beforehand, and if you tune yourself to just your very best, you know. Like, I'm Christian, so I pray and I sing hymns, and I get myself in mm-hmm. just my very best human way of being me. And
in
then,
connecting, yeah.
And sort of you tuned the information that's coming in, can tune to that vibration in you, and you'll end up getting higher information that way.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
You just have to stay real. You can't.
Yeah.
You know, you can't get higher than you can hold in a stable way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that takes time.
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
Well, thank
you. Thank
you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I need to put in a little plug for Carla's book. She's got a book called The Channeler's Guide. What is it called? The Channeler's Guide.
Channeler Handbook.
Handbook, Channeler's Handbook. I got the book. I should know the title. Anyway, you can get that at llresearch.org if you want to check that out. I think it's probably one of the only books out there that actually is a, you know, handbook, guidebook for learning how to channel and doing it safely.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
All right. Feel free to stick around and listen to the show.
Okay.
We're going to cover some interesting stuff tonight. All right.
Alrighty.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Okay. All right. I guess now we can go on to our opening riff.
Okay.
This is from Kuo, June 21st, 2002. We are aware that each within this circle has serious difficulties in enjoying all aspects of planet Earth. There are memories, shall we say, of better times, of happier vibrations to rest in. And yet, once one begins to link in a comfortable and subconscious way with one's spiritual family, one is able to recover a good bit of this sense of comfort, knowing that one truly is not alone on the level of intention and desire and group service. For this is a mission that can be done not by one, but by a group. The one known as Jesus pointed out that if an entity has perfect faith, it can move mountains. And that entity, known to this group as Ra, pointed out that while it takes a pure entity to move a mountain, if a group attempts to move a mountain, each within the group may have an acceptable amount of distortion and the mountain will still move. That is the power of the very deeply felt linking into one's spiritual family.
Thanks, Monica. I thought it might be good today to focus on something that we have in common, not because of our blood, our roots, our family that we were born into, but the family that we feel that we're a part of because of our commonly held beliefs and the way we look at life. And such a group is made up of those who have been moved by the material that our group has offered through the years, the Law of One, the Confederation material in general. It's been a blessing all these years, ever since this experiment began in 1962, to feel that growing sense of spiritual family, to feel the bonds twining, not usually physically, but through email, through letters in snail mail. Back when we began channeling, there wasn't such a thing as a computer. There was no World Wide Web, and everything moved quite a bit slower than it does now. Communication was a matter of days, sometimes weeks. You wrote a letter, and it took a while for it to go, and then these days you can communicate with someone and have an answer back instantly. It's amazing the difference and how things have speeded up. But at whatever speed our world has moved, it has always been so that there are those that are moved by the Law of One material that have in common, among other things, feeling alienated from the, quote, normal, close quote, world. Somehow not being able to bring up things that really matter to one, not being able to share those interests that are so important to us. And I know when we have our annual homecoming and everybody gathers together from all corners of the earth and everybody discovers, oh my gosh, this is a whole group of people that anything I say is going to be okay with them. They're not going to tell me I'm foolish. They're not going to tell me to get real. They're not going to put me down. They're not going to make fun of me. They'll listen to me. They'll understand me. They'll have something to say back to me that I might not have heard before. It's just so exciting. And the energy that is created when these groups get together is incredible. And we can do that. We can do that all the time. We just need to lean into our spiritual family far and wide. It's not a difficult thing to do. It's a matter of wanting to do it. It's a matter of missing that feeling of family to the point where we actually take the time to sit down and tune in to those in our spiritual family and just rest in the love that abounds in that unknown contact. Because, you know, when people come to homecoming, when people come to gatherings here at L&L Research, they're strangers. They're total strangers. They've never met. And yet within 15 minutes, they're old friends, because they feel that acceptance, that instant family feeling of love. And when we think of life and what we want to do, it's not just the big things that it helps us to realize we have a family, we can lean on this family. It's the daily things. It's regular living where it helps us to stop in the morning and just thinking of our day. We can imagine the day. Okay, what do I want from my day? Well, I want to serve the Creator today. I want to help someone today. I want to remember to keep smiling. I want to remember to look for the best in the situation instead of the worst. And set our intentions for when we go to work, how it's going to be there, all of the ways in which we're going to live today, all the relationships, you know. How are we going to be with our spouse, with our friend, with our child, with our parents? Whatever our situation is, how shall we treat those around us? Envision that. And then vow, intend, desire to live in love today. And realize that there are a lot of people that want to be with you in that life, that want to live in that vibration with you. And feel that. Just take a minute to feel that. You're not alone. You have help on this side of the veil and on the other side of the veil as well. Because we all have our inner guides. We all have our angels. We all have those unseen friends that we have made because of the way we are. And we can ask them also for help because they're part of our spiritual family. But it's a matter of taking ourselves seriously enough to set our intentions and to link in. Just, you know, get that habit so deep that it becomes subconscious. And just set those desires to be of service and know we are a part of a group that wants to be of service above all else. And I know I find it easier after I've set my intention for the day, to live the day as I wanted it to be. Naturally, by 10 or 10:30 in the morning, many of my great intentions have been kind of shot full of holes because I make mistakes, and don't we all? But how wonderful it is to be able to live our lives according to the way that we would like to live them and not simply be a piece of dust in the wind that's blown by every opinion that comes across our energy field. Let's develop in ourselves that weight of personality that knows who I am, what I wish and intend, what I desire, and what I feel is the right thing to do. That's the power of very deeply felt linking into our spiritual family. And I hope that you can come to enjoy it as much as I do.
Okay, Jen, did you have anything to add to that?
I don't think so. I think that was probably well said.
I agree. Carla, I'd like to ask a follow-up question about a conversation we had last week. I think I know I had a little bit of a twinge of fear momentarily when we brought up the subject about ETs and negative ETs and mass landing and all that. And you know, I'm reasonably well grounded in the Law of One, and I just had that momentary twinge, and then I went, oh, okay. And then I listened to what you had to say, and then it made sense, and I went, oh, I get it. I understand. And the twinge disappeared. But I was thinking, you know, there might have been a lot of people listening to the show last week that perhaps aren't as well grounded in the Law of One, or for whatever reason, you know, may have had a little bit of fear triggered. So I was wondering if we could revisit that and maybe clarify a few things about
that. Absolutely. Why don't we?
Okay.
Yeah, I knew that that's what you felt, and I took a little time and I went back and I looked at the very little actually that Don asked about ETs and UFO landings and whatnot. You know, in the sense of real time you know, situations, and it's very slight, as you know too, probably. So what I was offering at the end of the program was something I had read not in the Law of One, but in some other material. And it just seemed to me that it was probably what was going on, you know, that there were three types of entities that were involved in watching Earth today, those that wish us well, those that are simply watching and are indifferent, and those that don't wish us well at all, and that we really are perfectly safe because those that don't wish us well would have to come together in one total agreement, and we as a planet would have to come together in total agreement that we wanted them to land, you know, that we wanted this to happen. That's the only way that they would be able to break quarantine. And it's never going to happen because the nature of negative energy, whether it's on Earth or whether it's elsewhere, is that it's so hard to keep a connection going because everybody's looking out for himself. So you try to make a, you know, connection with someone, you try to make an agreement, okay, we'll do this together, and then it falls apart because one person thinks that the other person is cheating them or something. And so service to self has that great weakness. It just doesn't have the ability to pull something like that off. So I was not attempting in any way, shape, or form to alarm people. It just, I thought that it was interesting that, you know, you could realize that it's not all one way, that there are lots and lots of entities in the universe, and just like we have people on this earth that are very positively oriented and people that are very mean and very negatively oriented. And then we have some people that just don't care. That's actually the way it is elsewhere as well. So what would you like to ask that would allay fear? And also, I think Jim may have something to say on that, Jim.
Well, I think we need to look at all of this drama that's going on in the context of the planet Earth is going to be a positively oriented fourth density planet, and that the interaction between positive and negative entities that goes on now and will continue for a while is something that is the negative entities are doomed to failure. There's going to be a lot of drama, and it's really not that important because this kind of stuff has been going on for a long time, and people of a positive orientation here on the planet are really protected by their purity. When you seek to know the Creator and to be one with the Creator and those about you, and you seek to open your heart in love and light, that there is a force that emanates from you that is returned to you by those of unseen nature, your guides, angels, extraterrestrials, whatever you like to call them. And there's, there is a way made for those to find their way through the confusion. And this has always been true, and it will continue to be true. This is a planet that's ready to be born into fourth density, and I think probably the great signal factor of the 12-21-12 is that that was really the axis turning, the momentum gaining in a way that cannot be stopped, that the planet is headed toward the positive polarity. And what occurs between now and the final determination of the population to be all positive is really kind of interesting, amazing. Most of it we will never know about. In the ultimate sense, rather unimportant, because 10,000 years from now, the only thing that will matter is that this is a positive planet, and we are all protected by the love we give and receive.
Okay, what about, and that does help a lot, thank you. I think that definitely clarified quite a bit. Now, what I'm wondering, you mentioned the quarantine, Carla, and, you know, I want to reference a session from, I believe it was from Kuo, from 2007, February 11th, and there is a thread at the bringforth.org forum in the sessions and focus section specifically about this particular session. And it's one of my favorites. We mentioned it, I think, last week, and we've mentioned it from time to time. And Kuo was talking about how the negative entities, the negative elite, have failed in their mission to, or in their quest to dominate the planet and turn this into a negative planet. They really have failed, that the balance has been tipped. There's enough positive entities who've chosen the positive path. So we will, in fact, rejoin the time lateral. Now, I always interpreted that to mean that the quarantine would be lifted, but am I wrong on that? Is that two separate things? Can you explain what the time lateral is versus the quarantine?
Well, you know, I guess I'd have to hear another reading and ask if the time lateral would be lifted at the beginning of fourth density or whether it was strictly for third. I don't know. I really don't have a logical answer. I assumed, perhaps wrongly, that the quarantine didn't have as much to do with changing from third density to fourth density as it did with the people on the planet and their ultimate disposition. In other words, while there are still third density people on the planet, the fact that the planet itself is now fourth density, it seems to me that the quarantine would not have to do with the planet as much as it would have to do with the people. So until the last third density person has finally walked those steps of light and either chosen to repeat third density in another planet or graduated, I would think that the quarantine would remain for them. And I assume that there are still a lot of third density people on the planet at this point. I don't think that we're inundated at this point with a lot of new fourth density people. I think that we're still in the process of many, many of us being in our last incarnation on Earth, third density. So I can't remember a reading where it says one way or the other. Monica, Jim, how about you?
No, I don't remember any reading that specifically addresses that point, but it just makes sense that once this is a purely fourth density planet and the veil has been lifted between the conscious and subconscious minds, that the population of the planet then would not need a quarantine. They would be able to make any recognition necessary on their own. They wouldn't have to have the help that we need in third density because we do have that veil. We can't know things for sure. You know, the fourth density is the density of love and understanding, and we don't have understanding here. We're not wise enough and haven't had enough experience penetrating our veil. But in the fourth density, that will be the case. People will be able to slowly begin to remove the veil and will begin to see for themselves so they won't have to have things done for them.
Okay, that really makes a lot of sense about having to do more with the people. That's very helpful. I think the reason I was wondering about the quarantine being lifted or being somehow thinned, or the veil being thinned, rather, was I remember something about some of the UFO sightings. I know most of them are thought forms, but it seems like I remember something about some of them slipping through the quarantine, possibly. Mm-hmm. And clearly that's been happening more as of recently. I mean, it's just this past year, there's been a lot more UFO sightings than previously. And I mean, it's on the mainstream news now, you know, all these massive UFO sightings, I mean, fleets. And so that's what's making me wonder, well, gosh, is the quarantine being lifted? Is that why we're, you know, the mass public is now becoming more aware of these UFOs? I mean, it's like, you know, before it was kind of obscure. Everybody knew about UFOs, but, I mean, it's on the mainstream news.
Yeah, I have no answer to that. How about you?
Well, one of the things that Ra described was the window effect, and Don questioned a little bit about that, and that there is what Ra described basically as a random number generator that provides a window through the quarantine for entities that are magically able to find it and use it. And
yeah, that's it. That's what I was referring to. Exactly.
Yeah. Usually these are higher fourth density, and occasionally a fifth density entity can make a path through using this window effect. And because it seems random to us, and we can't predict when this happens, but Ra mentioned that on the level at which the window effect was generated, it's not random. It was generated on purpose. And I think that the reason it was generated and is there is because there is a need in these latter days for experiences of this nature to occur, both positive and negative, so people can begin more of the questioning of, well, what is this life about? Well, who are these entities? Are we alone in the universe? If we're not alone, what does that mean? So I think there are more sightings and more experiences, probably both of a positive and negative nature, but I think individually more for the positive nature, that entities are able to take this unusual experience that, as you say, we're seeing on the evening news and begin to question. Some people won't question no matter how many entities, UFOs are sighted, but others will begin, maybe for the first time in their life, to begin asking questions. And I think that now toward the end of the master cycle, that this is occurring to kind of give people a last bump, a last chance to ask questions, make choices.
Okay. Now, getting back to what you said earlier, that the only way there could be a mass landing of negative entities would be if they were all working together, which, as we know, is not the nature of negative entities, so it's not going to happen. So would the converse of that also be true? In other words, the only way there would be a mass landing of positive entities would be if enough 3D humans on this planet were of a positive nature and would actually attract them to appear?
That's probably even less likely to happen. I mean, we've got now, I believe, 7 billion people on the planet. It's not very likely we could all agree on anything.
So probably neither is likely then.
Probably
no.
Okay. Well, I'm satisfied. You guys are
okay. Well,
all right.
Those of you who still have a question, please write it into Monica, and we'll be glad to chew it over. As I said, you know, I looked at the stuff that was in the actual raw material about UFO contact. They talk a lot about how to tell positive contact from negative contact. They give a very comforting note, you know, if there were nuclear bombs used, that no soul would be lost, that they have permission to retrieve souls, so that the nuclear devices that are so powerful could not disintegrate those vibrations that make up a soul. What makes UFO information negative? What makes it positive? Let's see. And by the way, that's worth talking. What makes information about UFOs negative? It's not the specificity of the information which attracts negative influences, says Ra. It's the importance placed upon it. That's why we iterate quite often, they go on to say, when asked for specific information, that it pales to insignificance, just as the grass withers and dies, while the love and the light of the one infinite creator redounds to the very infinite realms of creation forever and ever, creating and creating itself in perpetuity. Why then be concerned with the grass that blooms, withers, and dies in its season, only to grow once again due to the infinite love and light of the one creator? This is the message we bring. Each entity is only superficially that which blooms and dies. In the deeper sense, there is no end to beingness. So, you know, looking at questions about UFOs in our skies is a lot like watching Entertainment Tonight to me, sort of that level of the buzz of the day. And I don't, you know, mean to say that it's not interesting, or that people that are interested in it couldn't find a great deal to learn, but that, well, compared to the messages of love and light, you know, I think that Don was right when he dropped his hard UFO research and went with studying what the channeling had to say. It's just there's more there that seems to be of help to the seeker.
Now, in a nutshell, if someone were to encounter a UFO, or ETs rather, some kind of other beings, what advice would you give them to ascertain whether they're positive or negative?
Well, I mean, I think that if you haven't, you're having an experience, I think that if you have no fear, if you suddenly discover that not only is this going on, but that you seem not to be afraid, that you can pretty well not stop worrying. That's a positive UFO contact. If the result of the contact is that you're excited and you feel, oh my gosh, this is so great, you know, this really lets me know that there's more than I thought there was. This really wakes me up. That's positive contact. If you start getting scared, well, you've probably run into some of the negative entities, but they're not going to do any harm to you because there's something that they want from you. Usually, if it's a negative entity, they'll do something like seem to examine you and in the process take your DNA one way or another. And that's what they want. So it's not like they're going to kill you or anything. It's just that you're not going to have the most pleasant experience. And the people that have actually, that I have interviewed that have actually had experiences with real UFOs that leave dents in the ground and, you know, have, you know, physicality, is that kind of experience, that there's a physical examination of some kind, sometimes a very odd kind. And sometimes it's a sexual encounter. One Tennessee truck driver that we interviewed just said he hoped to heck that would come back because he was really, really very interested in seeing that little redhead again. he wasn't exactly terrified. So I just go with it, man. You know, as Don was always sure that if he had an encounter, it was going to be the positive guys. And they said, "Well, what would you do?" And he said, "Well, I'd say take me to your leader." That's what Don said. I think I'd go with it. I just sit there and experience it and go, "Wow, I'm really having a UFO experience at last. Been studying these things all my life. Finally, I'm having an experience with one." I think I'd be pretty excited myself.
Okay. All right. Anything to add about UFOs, Jim?
No, I think Carla said it well.
Okay, I think so too. I'm going to go to the next question then. This is from JP. For about the past 15 to 20 years, I or someone or something has been materializing things out of thin air. I would be doing something, working with or using the thing, it's right there, and then all of a sudden I can't find it. I look for it, tear the place apart, still can't find it. Then turn around, go back to a place, and right there in plain sight, there it is, in the middle of nowhere. Small objects, toothpicks, calculators, etc., just poof out of nowhere. But now this is happening to me in public, and the things are getting larger, like a big 4-inch pepper shaker right in the middle of the empty table when I went to another table to get another shaker. What the heck is going on? What part of my mind is doing this, and why? Or is the universe just putting things back in order? You've always said thoughts are things, thought forms are real. Is this a part of that? Does the illusion lose some of its order and we restore it out of need? Some of my friends report the same story. I'm very curious about this. Any info would be great. Thanks and blessings from JP.
Well, I can certainly say, JP, you're not the only one. Monica and I had a similar conversation recently where she was saying, you know, I bought a whole pack of underliners, and I use them in my work, and I was working with them, and then I went to get another one. The whole pack was gone. I tore the house apart looking for it, couldn't find it, come back, there it is, sitting there on top of the table, and I know it wasn't there before. So, yeah, you're not the only one.
And we both witnessed it. My husband and I both witnessed it. It was a bright pack of highlighters, 6 fluorescent markers in the middle of the kitchen table. It was gone, and it was there the next day. I mean, it was there, then it was gone for 2 days, and then it was there.
And the most, you know, astounding time that that happened was when Don experienced things materializing and then tossing themselves around the room. I mean, Don heard a ping when he was sitting with Uri Geller in a motel room, and he looked in one of those little liquor bottles, the kind that you have on the airplane, had gone all the way across the room and had bounced off that hard window. You know, they have those windows in motel rooms that are sealed shut forever and you can't ever get a breath of fresh air. And, you know, it bounced off the window. And where did it come from? Well, goodness knows, but Uri was always full of things that were totally inexplicable. And, you know, is it spirit? Are they trying to tell you something? I think what you get from this is a wake-up call. And I think it's a good thing because you see that there's much more going on, much more to energy than is explained by anything that we understand. So we just have to realize that we need to open our minds as widely as possible to possibility, you know, infinite possibility. I think that's what I would take that for. I don't see that it's positive or negative or anything in between. I see that it's helpful in that this is information that we need. We need to know that there is more to life than what we see and what we, you know, what goes on TV and what we learn in school. There's so much more than that. There's so much more to spirit than that. And we become magical beings once we realize that where we enter into this is in creating ourselves as powerful people by taking ourselves seriously enough, as I was saying earlier, to set our intentions and you know, decide how we want our days and our events in our lives to go, and visualizing them as we wish them, and asking for help in having this visualization come to be our manifest truth. You know, we become magical beings when we start creating our own way of seeing and our own expectations for ourselves, and not giving our power up to others, but retaining it for ourselves. So, you know, what we desire and what we intend is very, very important. It creates our subjective universe. And I can guarantee, you know, after working with my thoughts and becoming hopefully a more disciplined human being through the years I've worked with the Law of One material, and as a Christian as well, and just as an ethical human being, that, you know, by attempting to be a person of honor, taking myself very seriously, any promise that I've made, I follow through. Anything I said I will do, I do. I try to do everything to the very best of my ability. And I'm not patting myself on the back here. I'm just telling you, this is how you take yourself seriously. This is how you become a magical personality. This is how you create your own universe so that your universe has a lot more love in it than other people's, so it seems. And things go better for you than they do for others because your internal radar is always looking for the best, the highest, you know. And it happens so much more that way when you are focused on it. And leaning into that, leaning into the power of prayer, of visualization, of setting your intention, all those things. So I would just say, you know, when that happens, jot it down. Take note, because there is so much more going on than we can explain. And I think spirit sometimes wants to get our attention, say, hey, you know, there's energy here, and how about focusing your own energy on your greatest desires? You know, what are your desires for yourself, for your life? What are your intentions, not just for your day, but, you know, for the big things as well? how do you wish things to go? And leaning into those unseen forces that have enough energy to make something appear and disappear. Have that help working for us.
You know, it has happened
that
to us
sense,
so many.
Monica?
Oh, well, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, my husband and I are fans of Nassim Haramine. We've listened to his lectures extensively, and he says you are the event horizon, and along the lines of what you just said about creating your own reality. So we and plus we're big Star Trek fans, so whenever it happens, we make a joke about it. Okay, this is we're at a nexus. That means we, if since this object's jumping in and out of this timeline, then that means we can jump in and out.
Right.
Okay, so we kind of take it as a wake-up call, you know, like when people see the 11:11 on the clock or something, you know,
yes.
We take it as, hey, this is a special time, what's, you know, like maybe the veil is thin here or something like that. And we think it's kind of cool. I mean, it's happened to him more than it has me, actually, but this was especially cool because we both saw it. But what do you think about the whole idea? I mean, what do you mean by create your own reality? Do you really think there are multiple possible future timelines for all of us here on this planet that we can choose to be on?
Oh, I definitely do. I think that there is a wide variety of ways that our lives can go at any one moment. And where we put our attention, where we put our energy, how we think and so forth, have a tremendous amount to do with the way things happen. You know, it seems miraculous sometimes how things just slide together. And I was just writing to a friend of mine today, Jude, who has helped me with a couple of books. She's done some tremendous work pre-editing them so that my chores are much lighter and I can zip through them in much less time. And she's done all the really hard work, the heavy lifting. And, you know, there are times when her parents have been ill, there are times when she can't do something because she's all, you know, completely over her head with work. And, you know, weekends, they think nothing of her working 80 hours a week. You know, she has times like that. And then she'll get a period where she can do the work and it comes to me at exactly the right moment for me to get it out there. And, it's just perfect, absolutely perfect. And I think that it's because both of us focus our lives really seriously to the point of you know, starting each day with prayer and doing a lot of visualization, doing a lot of asking ourselves, how do we intend this to be? And then setting our intention and then asking for help with that and so forth. And because of the fact that we're both doing it, it seems that everything happens for us just perfectly. And, yeah, I think there's a tremendous amount of power that we have over how things happen in our lives. Mickey?
I think that because we live in an ordinary world, it takes extraordinary things to get our attention. And it doesn't really matter what it is. Maybe we see a UFO and have an experience that wakes us up. Maybe the salt shaker appears and disappears on our table. Maybe we're thinking a certain thing, asking a question in our mind, and all of a sudden we read an article that answers that question, or we see meet a person that is giving us the information that inspires us to do something special with our lives and head in a spiritual direction. I think the number of ways that we are awakened is a great number. I mean, probably as many as there are people on the planet. And I think that these synchronicities are probably planned by us before the incarnation so that at some point we will be given, be giving ourselves the opportunity to take note of something to inspire us, to motivate us, to get us on another track, and that we've gathered as much information as we need from the ordinary world, and let's start using that catalyst for spiritual purposes. And I think that all of these things that are occurring, whether it's the veil being lifted or the quarantine allowing more entities through, all of this is coming together in a great famous final scene, I guess you say. You know, most movies have a a turning point where you see the heroes beginning to win the day and things are coming round right. Now, I think that's what's happening here, although there's a lot of confusion in which it also occurs. But for those who really tune in and look for the way their life wants to go, needs to go, that the way is made clear. And it's these unusual experiences that trigger us and really catch our attention and remind us that there's more occurring in this world than we're normally aware of, and maybe we should pay attention.
Interesting that you mentioned the normal world or the everyday world?
Ordinary.
Yeah, you said ordinary world, and yet there's so much more being discovered about this 3D reality that would not be considered ordinary. Like, for example, I mean, I'm not very scientific, but isn't there something about, you know, electrons can be in two places at once? And is it electrons? I think it is.
Well, the problem is they can't figure, either they can track an electron or they can place it someplace. It's the Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, which you're I think. And, you know, either it's a particle or it's energy. So they can track it, or there are ways in which they can say, oh, here's a particle. But they can't track it and see the particle. They can't, you know, they have no real idea. They don't, you know, when you get down to the very brass tacks, as a scientist, Don was always so frustrated because science was very smugly going along using electricity, using light, using magnetism, using gravity, using these things to make things happen in the world without realizing and wondering at the fact that we don't know what electricity is, what gravity is, what, you know, what magnetism is. And we can describe it, we can work with it, but as far as explaining it, when you get to a place where scientists are trying to explain it, they begin sounding like mystics, and they talk about, you know, the person that's doing the experiment being part of the experiment, the observer being part of the phenomenon, and you get to the point where you realize, oh my heaven, there seems to be one great force that binds us all together. And, you know, the string theory talks about how everything touches everything else, and those connections go on forever. So if we've met in this life or in another life, those connections are there, and so everybody is connected to everybody, and all things are, in, you know, as the scientists inform us at this point, one, and that one thing is consciousness, or they call it some ground of being. I'm not sure. There are different names for it depending on the scientist and what his background is, but I did a whole section in my book on what science is saying about the unity of all creation. It is becoming a scientific truth that all things are bound together in one, all things become one, all things are connected as part of one thing. And it's mind-blowing. It really is. Scientists are the new priests, you know, and they really are beginning to sound like they're talking about magic. It's wonderful to see.
Well, I know I'm a fan of Carl Sagan, and he said he discovered spirituality through science. You know, that was his path.
Mm-hmm.
And just marveling at the beauty of science and the universe.
Well, Einstein said that the scientist who doesn't become a mystic hasn't really been paying attention.
Yeah. Yeah. Einstein said a lot of cool stuff.
Yes.
Sometimes I wonder if he might be Nassim Haramein reincarnated. Or Nassim is Einstein reincarnated. He just kind of looks like him. If you look at a picture, I've watched so many hours of Nassim talking, and then I see footage of Einstein, and it's just weird. I get this feeling that he's Einstein. That's my opinion. I mean, it's just an idea. I don't know. But we are just about out of time, so I don't know if we really have time to take another question. We got just about 4 minutes left, really. But would you like to talk about another question, or you want to just talk about something else, or have any announcements?
Let's see. Do we have one that we could talk about briefly?
Well, we got mushrooms, and we got subdensities.
Oh, well, I think I could do mushrooms better. Psychedelic mushrooms, yeah. Yeah, I had mushrooms twice. I was interested in, at one point in my life, back in my 30s, I'm almost 70, and some were given to me, and I ate what was considered the right dose, and nothing happened. So I consumed the rest of them, which was like 10 more doses. Trying to see if something was going to happen. Nothing ever happened to me at all, except that I didn't feel very well for a couple of days. They're not very good. I mean, taste good. But as far as anything happening to me, psychically, I must have the hardest head in the universe. I tried LSD and nothing happened to me, except that I had more energy than usual and I got my desk clear for the first time in years. I actually answered every letter on the desk, got it all straight, you know. And after that, I was really exhausted for quite a while. But as far as anything psychedelic happening to me, I'm awash. And the same thing happened with mushrooms. So I think that I heard somebody say one time that his I think it was Ram Dass, maybe. It was Ram Dass or Timothy Leary, one of those two people, had said that he had given his guru LSD, and his guru said that there wasn't anything to that. And so he gave him a whole lot, and he took it, and nothing happened to him. So I'm not saying I'm anybody's guru or anything. God knows I'm just a bozo. But I think that maybe there's something to the kind of honesty with which I've lived my life or something like that, where I just have no response. So I think that in spiritual seeking, it's not particularly a good idea to use anything. I think it's a good, you know, I mean, you have the ability to experience it, and you know, if you can do that in private and in with the appropriate safety, you know, with somebody around you and so forth, good. Get the experience down and find out what you think. You may have a good trip, you may have a bad trip, or like me, you may have no trip at all. But then you've tried it, you know. Okay, well, I'm not curious anymore. I've tried it. So that's good. But if you use it to gain spiritual knowledge, here's what happens. You become artificially a different vibration than you are normally. And in that vibration, you receive knowledge. You receive information. You come back to your sober, everyday self. And in trying to use that information, you can blow your circuits. And I have worked with probably a couple dozen people throughout my experience as a counselor that had done just that, had used LSD or some other form of psychedelic drug and tried to take trips and then, you know, do spiritual work, see the Creator, whatever. And it just damaged the electrical body. And some of the chakras were damaged. And it's as difficult to get in there and repair those as it is to repair anything else that science doesn't understand. You know, they don't understand how you can blow your energy body in the first place. Consequently, there's nothing that science can give you that's going to knit that back together for you. And so it's very dangerous, I think. The potential of danger is there. So I say, be careful, guys. And when you're trying to do serious spiritual work, don't get high. Trust yourself. just sober self, and you'll do fine.
One other thing, I think that when people use a drug to get to a point where they don't get in their ordinary consciousness and they do receive some information that could be helpful, you have an increased level of responsibility to use that information in a positive sense. And if you aren't able to do that and to be responsible in putting that information to work in your lives, there can be repercussions, as Carla was talking about.
Interesting. Okay, well, I know that there's a lot of people out there. I know there's some discussion on the bringforth.org forum. There's several discussions about spiritual use of, you know, I never can say that word. Is it entheogens or, you know, anyway, the psychoactive, you know, LSD, mushrooms, peyote, that sort of thing. So there's actually several discussions on the forum if anybody wants to explore that further.
Well, so once again, we've
variety.
Been to go with something that I suppose could take much more discussion. So maybe
yeah,
we should
why.
Take this up at the beginning of the next Friday show. And it
exactly.
looks like we will have one. So
yeah,
no,
right.
no operation on the horizon yet. So see you next Friday.
So we will be here next week. So if anybody wants to explore that topic further, you can visit that bringforth.org and participate in the discussion or contact me at bringforth.org and just let us know if you have some follow-up questions on that topic or any other topic. Okay, Carla and Jim, thank you so much. Always an honor to work with you. And I want to let everybody know you've been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Record and Jim McCarty. Check out llresearch.org, featuring the Law of One material and other channeling transcripts and lots of other publications and interviews and speeches, and bringforth.org. That's bring, the number four, th.org. And we are here every Friday. I'm your host, Monica Leal. We're here Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern. Y'all have a great week, and we'll see you next Friday.